Welcome back to Calling Hours, a Homesteaders podcast. I am Danielle Burmeister, and I am so excited that you are joining us today because the conversation that we get to share with you is one I have been looking forward to you enjoying for weeks. Today's guest is Aaron Krieger. Aaron is the Chief Sales Officer for Envision Strategic Partners. Aaron has been in the funeral business for 11 years. She started out as an individual producer with Homesteaders and almost overnight became one of our highest producers, a $1 million producer, climbed up the ranks through Envision and is now managing their sales team. She helps recruit, train, motivate. Everything that Envision does really well with their agents comes from the leadership team and Aaron as well. And so I'm so excited for you guys to hear from her today. She has so much expertise on the pre-need space and what it takes to be successful, how to build strong teams and motivated teams. And she also has a lot to say about the Death Care Collective. Erin is a founder of the Death Care Collective here in the funeral space. It's been in the profession for about 4 years now. It started during COVID, and it is just such a remarkable organization led by a remarkable group of funeral professionals. So I'm so excited for you to hear from her and to learn more from her and to get to know her better. I know that you guys are going to love her just as much as I do. So with that, I give you Erin. Thank you for joining us today. I've been really excited for this interview.
Me too. Thank you for having me. And I'm glad it worked out for us to be in person.
Yeah. It does change the dynamic a little bit to be able to sit in the same space and see each other without the screens and the distractions that come with that.
So yes.
I've known your name for years at Homesteaders. I feel like it's one that's come up in a bunch of different contexts, always positive. But I've really only gotten to know you the last couple of years through some of the work that you've done on the Death Care Collective and with the ICCFA Sales and Marketing Committee. Like, I feel like your profile has just continued to blossom as people have learned to get to know you and have started really exposing themselves to you, which has been lovely. But I would love to start kind of back at the beginning and how you got your start in funeral service. So thinking back to those early days, what was it that was the catalyst for you?
Oh, wonderful. Well, thank you for those kind words. And it's been lovely getting to know you as well. So I started in the funeral profession. It's been almost 11 years now, which is crazy to think about. But I have been in sales my whole life. My dad is in sales and he's an entrepreneur, started businesses. And I've been in sales since I can remember, since I was 17. And in my 20s, I worked in home improvement. I was a regional manager and trainer, and I really enjoyed it for the moment, but realized that wasn't my lifelong calling. And had a difficult life transition. I got divorced and kind of just had to restart my whole life over. I got my mortgage license, realized that was not for me, got my real estate license. Also was not my lifelong passion, but my grandmother had an experience where a nice lady from a local funeral home had called her after her husband had passed away, my step-grandfather, and helped her arrange her whole funeral. And so she called me one morning and said, "Aaron, I woke up in the middle of the night and I know what you're supposed to do with the rest of your life." And so I joked with her that she needs to take her meds and what are you talking about? We were very close. So I came over and she said, "Well, I don't know what this lady does, but I picked out my flowers, I picked out my songs, my casket, and I think you'd be really good at it." And she was dressed really nice, so she must do well.
That's such a grandmother side note.
I know.
Just slip that in, Erin.
I can't, yes. Because she knew I was struggling financially. I was really starting my whole life over. So I said, okay. So I tracked down that lady. And that was actually Tacy Vogel, if you know Tacy.
I do.
Yes.
From the Death Care Collective.
Yes. So I called her and she said, "Well, I'll give you my boss's information, but don't call him right now because I've sent a couple people to him and it did not go well. They were not a good fit and they kind of wouldn't leave him alone or whatever happened there." And I said, "No problem. I won't, you know, I'll let it be." So I called him the next day. I called him the day after that. He didn't call me back, so I actually showed up at his office downtown.
So you did exactly the opposite.
She's totally a salesperson. But the difference was I knew this was where I was supposed to be. I actually had a little meltdown. I was starting to date a new guy who was super handsome and awesome and brilliant beyond even what I realized, because I ended up taking another job with this propane company of all things, and I went into work and I hated it. And I knew it wasn't where I was supposed to be, but this guy, Tacy's boss, hadn't called me back. And Mike's actually the one who encouraged me to get it together, go shower, go get dressed, go put on a suit coat and go down to this guy's office. And I did. And that's when he finally met with me. And that was West Folger. So we joke that I was either going to get a job or a stalking injunction. And so luckily he met with me and then I interviewed with him and Spencer Larkin, and that was with Larkin Mortuaries and Cemeteries. So I was excited to start at the beginning. I wanted to learn everything. I hadn't had a lot of people come into this profession with family experience with funerals or even a strong personal connection to a death, and it was really meaningful and they want to serve that way. I hadn't up until that point really attended even any funerals. And I didn't know what a vault was. I didn't know what an urn was. I knew nothing, but I knew that I loved serving people and especially older people. In high school, I had done some volunteer work in nursing homes and I would hang out in my grandmother's senior living community. And I just thought, wow, if this is something I could do that it just really feels like a conversation with people and I can help them prepare for the future for such a difficult day, and I can make a living for myself and my son, I'm all in, and I loved every minute of it.
That's such a beautiful story. And I didn't know a lot of that from your backstory. Is your grandmother still with us?
So she passed away 8 years ago, and she had, I'm just going to say it, what I thought was the worst pink casket, but I loved it because I knew she picked it out.
It was what she wanted.
It was exactly what she wanted. It was beautiful because it was her, but we laughed about it because, nope, this is what I want. And so she did pass away. Everything was taken care of. And it was a really special day, especially at that point. I'd now been working in the industry for a few years, so I had a better appreciation for everything that had gone into the intentionality behind that day. But so I've since lost my grandmother and my grandfather, who finally got my grandfather to pre-plan. It was her ex-husband. I sat down with him one day and he did everything. And so same experience there. So I'm very grateful to her. And she was very proud of me, and I know she still is.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, with 8 years ago, you started at Larkin 11 years ago, she would have lived long enough to see how wildly successful you were really out the gate at Larkin. Yeah. Thinking back on that, and I know it's been a minute, but what were some of the things that helped you be successful from day one?
Yes, that's a good question. I think you have to be smart enough to know what you don't know. And you have to attach yourself to a mentor, and sometimes it's a few different mentors. So I'd already had a fairly successful career with home improvement, and it took some humility, and I'm not going to say I went into it initially this way. I learned pretty quickly. I had to just be okay starting from the beginning. I couldn't bring any ego with me, because the truth is, yes, I had done sales, and I'm very passionate about that, but this was so different in so many different ways. And so I was fortunate enough to have several people there take me under their wing. Tacy, of course, was one of them, working for a conservative funeral home and with their traditions in Salt Lake City and making sure I felt comfortable there. And then, of course, West teaching me everything and other people on the team. But I learned very quickly that relationships within the funeral home locations were important, and learning from the funeral directors, and that not everyone is the biggest fan of pre-need. You would be surprised, if anyone listening to this maybe isn't. A lot of the funeral directors had walls up because they want to make sure you're there for the right reasons. So you really had to earn their trust. I think I expected day one they'd see me coming in and be willing to help. And I really had to earn their trust, which, as it should be. And I strengthened those relationships, and that helped. But I wasn't afraid to reach out to people. I think what made me the most successful was I viewed it as education. And my only job was to sit across the table from a family and educate them on their options. I never tried to guess before I met with someone if I thought they were going to buy or not, because it really did not matter to me. I knew that if I educated them on their options, more often than not, they would probably move forward. But even if they didn't, I felt really calm and at peace and fulfilled with the idea that I've at least helped them prepare a little bit more today than they were yesterday. And if they decide to do so in the future, fine. But I just enjoyed that conversation so much. I didn't focus on the sales part of it. I didn't focus on the outcome. I focused on the enjoyment of the conversation just for the sake of the conversation. And the relationships I built with those client families, I still have people to this day that call me. I haven't been selling in the field for several years. And I value those relationships. And if you focus on it as an education for those families, and really that's our duty, is to educate, not to sell, the irony is that you end up selling so much more.
It's such an interesting perspective, because I think consumers, we all can smell inauthenticity. When someone is coming in and their goal is to sell us, we can tell that immediately.
Yes.
And it can be really off-putting. So someone who comes in and really is just wanting to be a partner, wanting to be a good resource for a family, that feels different. That feels like a much better experience for a family that's dealing with a very sensitive planning process.
Right. Yes. And I was fortunate enough that pretty quickly, of course, my real passion is around training and coaching and developing other sales leaders. And I shared that with West fairly early on, but of course I had to learn the business, but it put me in a really unique position to also build and cultivate a team that shared that same mindset. And it was an incredible group. We had 12 pre-need sales counselors. We worked, you know, there were 4 funeral homes and 2 cemeteries, but every single person there just loved those families, and it was all about the education. And so the entire culture of the organization at that time was also just shared the same mindset. So it was fun. So mm-hmm. It was fun coming to work every day. It was fulfilling. It was rewarding, because when you approach it that way, you're exactly right. That's when the sales come. And yes, I think so often older consumers especially are discounted. And they're the smartest of all of us. Like, they have been around this block so many times, they can sniff it out. If you are not here for the right reasons, they're going to be able to tell so quickly. And it doesn't matter if you have the most perfect words in the world, they're not going to be interested because they can tell that it's not genuine. And that's, I appreciate that point, because I think so often we assume, oh, they're older, maybe they're naive, and it's just the opposite. We have so much to learn from them. So just be honest and transparent. Probably my first 2 months, Danielle, any family I sat with, I was just honest. Just so you know, I'm new in this role. I'm learning. Bear with me. I might have to step out a couple times. Every single time, hand on my arm, oh, honey, you're going to do great. Don't you worry about that. Thanks for telling us.
I love that.
Because they appreciate the honesty. Don't try to be something you're not, because they can see right through it.
Well, I think it's one thing to tell, you know, prospective pre-need agents that are new into in the environment. It's one thing to tell them, go into it with this education mindset. It's another to put yourself in an environment where you're surrounded by like-minded people who support you in that, who aren't knocking on your door after every appointment. Did you sell? Did you close? I think the way that you talk about the culture that you had at Larkin and the culture that West built around that, the culture that you continue to build in your role now, I think that's a huge part of the piece that we don't always talk about with pre-need agents.
Yes, and it's easier said than done, right? And there's some days that are easier than others. And it doesn't mean everyone always agrees or gets along. But if we all have the same common goal, is that every client family that walks through that door needs to know how important they are. And whether they choose to pre-plan or not, it is a successful appointment if you built a relationship of trust. And whether they pre-planned or not, they're going to come back to this funeral home location. That means you've done your job. And you actually know from some of the data you've done with the policyholders that 2/3 of all families who pre-plan, right, generally will do so with the first funeral home they meet with.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a really unique opportunity and obligation to do a good job of building that relationship. And if we focus on the sale, and if it feels that way to the family, we'll turn them off very quickly. But the irony is, if you do a good job, more often than not, they will move forward, because it generally does make sense, both emotionally and financially, for them to move forward.
Yeah, and it may take time. You cited our policy owner research, and we do. We ask that question every single time. How many funeral homes did you consider before you made your arrangements? And it's pretty consistent. It's 73% of them and only consider one.
Yes.
And so we talk about that a lot, about marketing and brand building and the importance of that. But the other metric we don't mention as often is that for about 25% of people, it takes 2 years from the time they first hear about pre-arranging to when they finally make those arrangements, when they finally feel ready, like this is the right time. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that mm-hmm. that some families just need more nurturing. Some families need more time to sit with it, to feel good about the decision they're making and the ways that, as a funeral profession, we want them to feel good about this. And so I think I love your mentality, because it feels like it's giving them breathing room and space. But the actual outcome is that you are selling and you are successful.
Yes. And that's the piece, too, that I think salespeople specifically need to remember. On average, it could be 6, 8, 10, 12, 20 touch points before someone meets with you. So probably now that they're actually sitting in front of you, probably they've done some thinking about this. This isn't the first time they've thought about it. It is now your job to make them feel safe and comfortable enough that it does feel like the right time to move forward. And if it's not, hopefully you've built a strong enough relationship that you've earned the right to stay in touch with them. That's something mm-hmm. that we have to earn. It's not something that's given.
Well, and you and I have talked about this before, that there's inherent value in relationships you have to earn as opposed to the ones that just fall into your lap. They feel different when you work for it.
Yes.
I want to talk a little bit about managing a sales team. You have been very successful in your role now, training trainers, essentially. But even before that, when you were recruiting agents and you were onboarding them, what are some things that you have learned in terms of the management side, the recruiting side, that have made a difference for you?
Well, you always recruit for attitude and train for skill, right? I think it's easy. I'm guilty of this myself. Sometimes it's just easier to find someone who feels like they have the right experience. But if someone has the right attitude and mindset, they're going to figure it out. Now, you're going to have to work with them. You're going to have to train them. But I always am interested in their why. Why are you here? Why are you doing this? Whether it's from a sales counselor perspective at the funeral home level or one of our sales managers or our recruiter, our director of recruiting, why are you choosing to do this, right? They're very talented, capable people, and we have to be here for the right reason. Because yes, of course you have to feed your family, and financially that has to make sense, but I can usually sniff that out pretty quick. I'll just say, I've both from a sales counselor level or a manager level, if they're not here for the right reason, it's not going to work. And they're not going to be able to build the trust of the sales team. So if it's someone who is managing and coaching sales professionals, that talk about trust that has to be earned. That's not going to happen overnight. So A, they have to be able to prove that they know what they're talking about if they're managing a sales team. But they also have to be able to show and prove that they have their team's best interest at heart. And that's not easy to do, and not many people, frankly, have that ability. So finding the people that are here for the right reasons first, and then they've got to be thick-skinned. I mean, you can't sugarcoat it. It's a hard job. It's an emotional roller coaster almost daily. It's really kind of a sacred honor to be able to support the sales counselors out in the field, because if they don't sell, they're not feeding their families. So this isn't something we take lightly, and it's our job to be able to support them, which means they have the tools, the resources, the scripts. It can't be asking, what do you need? Because quite often they don't know. It has to be that we see what their needs are. And it might be, if you have 12 different salespeople on your team, they might all have 12 different needs, and you need to be able to figure that out. Because it's always a few steps ahead. And if you don't notice it until they're struggling, sometimes it can be too late.
I want to talk a little bit about accountability, because part of the core discipline that you have to have as a manager of salespeople is the ability to have difficult conversations, to hold those individuals accountable. And to some extent, the work will do that for them, right? It's a commission-based system. They're going to make money or not based on their performance. But there are times when you have to have hard conversations. And I think you alluded to that with the thick skin. You know, they have to be able to hear no from customers. They have to be able to take feedback. I suspect that in addition to having pre-need agents listening to this, we probably also have some funeral home owners, some managers that want to get better in that area. So what would you say to them?
Yes, I will say this. Your why isn't their why. You need to understand what gets your people out of bed every morning. And you need to have those conversations on a fairly regular basis. So, of course, New Year's, this always, you know, New Year's is, oh, resolution time. What's my goal for the year? For the next 365 days, we're not going to talk about this again. Like, this should be a conversation we're having regularly, at least quarterly. But if I sit down with you, Danielle, and you work for me at my funeral home and you're selling, and I know enough about you, and you've got your kids, and you know, you've got young kids, and you need to make X, Y, and Z dollars, and you have these goals and ambitions, I am going to create metrics that help you reach your goals based on what you choose, not based on what I choose. So I might know you well enough to say, listen, Danielle, I know you're a million-dollar producer. I can see it. I've done this a long time. But maybe you don't want to be a million-dollar producer. Maybe, you know what, I'm at a place in my life where I'm starting to take it easy. I'd be thrilled to sell $427,000 a year. Great. If that's your goal, then that's what we're going to do. And then you just simply work backwards. Based on that goal, Danielle, this is what we're going to do. Tell me what you think about this plan. But we have to get buy-in, right? They have to feel like they're a part of that. Now, if you say, hey, actually, I want to sell $2 million a year. Awesome. I'm all in. Buckle up, we're going to do this together. But I have to receive permission from you buy into the plan, but you're also going to have to acknowledge that, okay, we're going to be checking in. I'm going to see how this is going. And if we're off track, we're going to get you back on track. How does that sound? So again, it's an earned relationship of trust. It's not going to happen 30 minutes after I met you. We have to take the time to get to know each other. But I think so often we want other people's goals to be our goals. And that just might not always be the case.
Yeah, so it's about having clear, manageable goals, clearly articulating them, having regular touch points where you're reviewing their progress to those goals and making sure that that goal is tied to something that matters for that employee, for that team member.
Yes, and maybe not manageable goals. Like, I'm all in for ridiculous goals. Like, let's get crazy, because I have seen people do some crazy things. I mean, I've hired at a sales counselor level people that literally were borrowing a car to get to work, and I've seen them go buy a brand new Nissan Altima within less than 6 months. I mean, so it's pretty exciting to see your people be able to save up down payments for home. So the goals can be crazy. What's manageable then is the activity, and that's what you're holding them accountable to. And it has to be daily. You can't check in twice a month and see how they're doing, because now if they're off track, they're so far off track, it's really hard to get them back there. So that's what you learn to manage. And no matter how crazy a goal is, if you break it down to the ridiculous, it's usually pretty attainable. Mm-hmm. The key is the consistency. So that's where we have to stay in touch until they get to that place.
Yeah, you want to be at $500,000. Well, to close $500,000, you have to have this many appointments. To have this many appointments, you have to make this many phone calls. To have that many leads, you need to host this many community engagement seminars and this send this much direct mail or do whatever it is. So you kind of work backwards.
That's exactly it. Yes. But the buy-in starts from them. Mm-hmm. That's the difference, is it can't be my idea. Now, I might encourage you. Now, I know you said $400,000. Can I share with you what I think your potential could be? Well, sure. And then, okay, now what do you think? But there has to be buy-in. Otherwise, it's going to feel forced. And that's where it feels micromanaging. Because I never even agreed to this. This isn't what I want. Or it's because the trust and the relationship's not there.
Let's lean into that last point a little bit, because I think there's kind of a balance in the funeral space between the younger workers and the older generations, you know, the more seasoned and tenured employees, both in the pre-need space and the funeral space, and then the generation coming up behind them that are young and hungry and have a different work style. I'm not a particularly seasoned individual myself, but even I in my role and my team, I'm starting to see differences between just the age disparities that we have. How do you manage to that? How do you manage differently for one than the other? How do you build rapport and culture within such diverse teams?
Well, we have to start by stopping with the eye-rolling energy about the younger generation. Can you believe this new generation? They just don't do it like we do it. They're always on Instagram or...
I think it's TikTok now. I'm in my 30s, so it's Instagram for me.
Facebook.
But,
What's it? Yes, right.
Yes. WhatsApp, like, is that a thing?
Yeah.
I don't even know. Drinking their Starbucks.
Exactly,
yes. I was growing up, it was so fetch. And that's like, this generation even understand what that means.
No cap. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. So whatever the new thing is, if that's how they communicate, and that's actually their social network, is Snapchat, for example, and we're sitting there making snide comments about it, it's not helpful. Just because, again, because they're not doing it the way we would do it, doesn't mean it's wrong. And I do sense this energy of, we think we're better than this new generation because XYZ. Now, I'm sure that's a theme. That was the same in the 50s about people that were, you know, came later, and then people in the 80s, and now here we are. But we have to be aware of, they deserve just as much respect, and wherever they're falling short on their skill is where we need to help. But if we hired them and we trusted them to come on, we have to then trust that they're the right fit and we need to spend the time. There are some gaps, right? I know we're hearing a lot of stories of mortuary science students graduating and maybe they don't know how to write an email. They've never done that. Instead of making them feel stupid, why don't we give them some coaching and training? Because this is what I will say, probably their heart is definitely in the right place and they really want to serve those families. But there's some areas they're going to need help with. I think we just need to stop with this, this new generation is the worst. I mean, I've heard rumblings of versions of that, or at least that's the energy of it. And I don't think that's helpful. I think they deserve just as much respect. But then they're going to need more flexibility. That's part of it. And I know that's hard for some funeral home locations, but 70% right now of mortuary science students are women. And guess what, Danielle? Sometimes women have children.
I'd heard that, but it's good to have that confirmed.
Yes. So they have children. That means sometimes they've got to go to a doctor's appointment or they've got to pick up their kids. So create some flexibility that doesn't make them feel guilty or that they're bad or they're not working as hard as some of their other counterparts that don't have children. There's things like that that we need to have some grace for that I sometimes see we're lacking.
Hmm. Yeah, that's something. I have a team that is predominantly women, and that's something that I'm very conscious of. I also am a young mom. I also have doctor's appointments and school pickups and things like that. And it's not just the people on my team that have children. You know, they have pets that they need to, yes, over their lunch hour, go and care for. They have aging parents.
Yes.
They have lives outside of work. And so it's that really careful balance, and it's really hard to achieve. But between, you know, nurturing their mental and physical well-being at home and making sure they have balance, and at the same time bringing the right amount of accountability and high expectation for them. And you never get it quite right. You know, it's, yes, always kind of a push and pull. You're always going a little too far in one and not far enough in the other. But it's constantly checking in. How is the balance here? Are they in an environment that they're going to be successful?
Well, and the fact that I love your approach, and I think you can even be transparent and a little vulnerable in saying, hey, I really want to work with you and I'm doing my best. It's not going to be perfect. There's going to be some push and pull. Let's just stay in communication about it. If they know that your intention is there, even if the actions don't exactly line up, they will appreciate it because they need to see that you see who they are. And I've also seen there's a lot of people now choosing not to have children, or they don't have children for whatever reason. They need to be given the same freedom and flexibility because, like you said, they have other challenges. Or maybe they're not comfortable even telling you they have aging parents. Sometimes it's not any of our business. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't have to always give a reason or defend it, but just give people the grace. And I think that alone will make a big difference. I've also learned, I just did a presentation, but LinkedIn Learning did a study, and 93% of young professionals now value career development, personal development as one of their most important things. So they want to feel like they're learning and growing. So invest in some, it can be virtual learning. It could be maybe a local Better Business Bureau event. Maybe learning how to do presentations, maybe learning how to conduct meetings, maybe have them conduct a couple meetings. Let them feel empowered within the team. And I think that also goes a long way.
Well, and I think also recognizing as someone who's more seasoned in their career that the skills that you have now, you had to learn. Yeah. And whether you knew to learn them yourself or someone told you that, it's a learned skill. You know, it's not something that we're not born being able to direct a meeting. We're not born being able to write a professional email. Right. Someone had to teach us those things. And so I think stepping back and recognizing that they just haven't learned that yet,
yes,
doesn't mean that they never will, or they're not capable, or that they're actively trying not to be professional, or whatever the story is that we're telling ourselves. They haven't learned it yet.
Right.
And they've got time.
Yes. And give them some grace.
I feel like this dovetails really nicely into the topic I was most excited to talk to you about, the Death Care Collective. I know this organization, it means a lot to so many women in the funeral profession. And to me personally, I know it's your baby. It's something that you kind of came up with in this wonderful group of women. So I want to hear from you the origin story. How did it come about? What was the vision for it?
Yes. So thank you for asking about this because I love this topic, of course. So this actually happened during COVID when we were all stuck at home, and we remember that horrible dark time. And I received a LinkedIn message from a gal that I did not know, but she said, hey, I've kind of been bouncing around your LinkedIn. It looks like you've been bouncing around. You know, we've liked each other's stuff and commented. And would you be willing to do a virtual coffee? Which I'd never even heard that term. And I said, sure. And that was Olga Peeler. And
I love her so much.
I know. I love her so much too. And that went so well. We said, why don't we do virtual cocktail? And I said, okay, great. So we did a virtual cocktail hour. And then that went so well. I said, oh, I've got to invite my other friend. And I invited Jamie Dravecki. And so then that turned into a book club. And then those of us who we did, it was a catchy name. You're in marketing. You'll love this. It was the Women in Funeral Service Book Club. Okay. We could have used some.
We could workshop it.
Yeah, exactly.
You landed in a better place.
Yeah,
we'll just put some spin on it.
Yeah. So we met at ICCFA the following year, and we did a breakfast for everyone who was part of the book club. And that conversation, we could have stayed there all day, but of course we had to go to the floor. We said, you know what? We should do, this feels like this maybe could be more. None of us knew what that meant. So we had a virtual discussion and decided that we weren't the only ones who were sort of starved for connection with other women within the space. And so there were 9 of us that are co-founders equally of the Death Care Collective. And that's been over 3 years ago now that that was launched.
I have to ask, because I love reading, what was the book that you guys started with?
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Okay, Dare to Lead. Mm. I don't know if that was our very first book, but that was one of them. And then Glennon Doyle. I'll have to look up the name of her book. But yeah. But we ended up doing one a month, and then it kind of transitioned from there.
Yeah. So now it's grown. I mean, you guys started with the 9 of you. Yeah. Or really just the two of you, you and Olga.
Yes.
And now it is just what feels like kind of a juggernaut in the funeral space. I mean, You guys have meetups, and I attended last year's ICCFA Fall Management Summit that was put together by the Death Care Collective. And I feel like even events that aren't connected to it are kind of grandchildren of it. Like, I went to a professional women's conference that the Oklahoma Funeral Directors Association was hosting. They're only the 2nd state and association in the country that has hosted that. And I feel like they're kind of on the shoulders of you guys, that there's this movement in this space right now to bring women together in the profession to make those connections. And it's just really become a beautiful thing.
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate that. It's grown much more quickly than we expected. It's still very organic. We have talked about at some point making it an official nonprofit, but we just, maybe a goal for next year. One initiative we're very excited about right now is DCC Local, which is some local grassroots chapters. So you'll start to see some announcements about that. We're really proud of that for sure.
Yeah.
Thanks for asking about that.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful organization and just led by just an incredible group of people.
Thank you.
We have 2 questions that we ask every single podcast
guest. Okay.
So the first one is, what are you reading right now?
I just finished rereading Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg. I had read that when it first came out, and I was at a different place in my career. And I really, while I don't necessarily agree with every single point in the book, I think it took a lot of courage for her to write that book, especially for who she is. And then I'm also reading Unreasonable Hospitality. Have you read that?
No.
It's so good. Okay, so I'm only about halfway through it, and I'll keep you posted as I finish it. In fact, I would love to talk about this book once I'm done with it. Because, you know, we think about our customers as far as like our client families, but we also have our internal customers, which is our team, our employees, and how do we make them feel so special? Because they are. And so often we think it needs to be a trip or something really extravagant, but it might just be pulling them aside. You know, hey, Danielle, I saw how you handled that really difficult situation yesterday, and I want you to know how much it meant to me. I was really impressed. Thank you again. You know, it doesn't need to always be something financial or shiny. So I'm really excited to finish that book.
Yeah. I have a team member who brought the idea a couple of years ago of having everyone on our team fill out an appreciation survey.
Oh, I love that.
About how they like to be recognized. And it's fun things like, what's your favorite snack? What's your Starbucks order? But it's also, do you like private or public recognition?
Oh.
What type of feedback is most effective to you? And we have everyone on our team take it on an annual basis. Because exactly what you said, what feels meaningful to one of my team members does not land with someone else. And so as a manager, I want to do the work to make sure that I am nurturing them and rewarding them and acknowledging them in ways that feel right and good for them. So
I would love to see that form.
Okay. I will share it with you, and I will look forward to hearing more about Unreasonable Hospitality.
Yes.
Yes, very much so. So the last question that we ask every single guest we have is, what is giving you energy right now?
Oh my gosh. Okay. I have just loved, I think part of it through the Death Care Collective, but part of it is I just love meeting new people. And I've had some really unique opportunities presented recently at the Michigan Cemetery Association Conference, which is a group I'd never been a part of. And frankly, only knew 2 or 3 people. And by the end of it, you know, I had like 30 new best friends.
Of course you did.
Of course. I just love it. I consider myself ridiculously lucky just to be able to get out and meet the people that I meet. And that has been giving me so much energy because I'm learning so much from them. I think we get so siloed in our groups and who we know, and then we all share the same ideas, which is great. But just get out there and just listen to some crazy ideas that you would never listen to otherwise, and just be open to learning. I am at this place in my life and my career where I'm really excited to learn. I just finished an AI certification, I think I might have told you about, through Northwestern, and it was 3 months. And not all of it was super specific to what we do professionally, but the concepts were so exciting, and just the idea that there's so much on the horizon to still learn. It's easy to feel like, oh, we've done this for so long, but I'm really just excited to continue learning more than I think I probably was even a year ago. And that's giving me a lot of energy right now.
Yeah, I love where you started with that, with the Michigan event and making connections. I think the business that we're in has a high potential for loneliness. It can be a very isolating job in any aspect of funeral service. And so making a point of developing connections and nurturing those and finding your people is one of the best survival tips you can provide to someone in this business.
Amen. I mean, the connections are priceless. So often we think, who do I connect with because I need to professionally? But so often it's just like you, Danielle. I mean, we obviously crossover, but I just love you and your energy, and I've learned so much from you. And connect with those people that just fill your bucket for no other reason than just, can I just chat with you for 5 minutes? I would love to catch up.
Yeah.
It's the best thing ever, because it can feel very isolating otherwise.
Yeah, those connections are so important. Well, thank you for joining me today. I feel selfish sometimes in this podcast because I mostly just get to have great conversations with people I admire and enjoy. And this is exactly what this was. So thank you for making time for it and for sharing your wisdom and your experience with our audience. It's just so valuable.
Thank you, Danielle. It was an honor to be here, and I'm thrilled it worked out.